In the 20s, Virginia Woolf began a correspondence with the artist Jakes and Gwen Ravara. Gwen was the granddaughter of Charles Darwin. The two Ravara were members of a group that Woolf liked to call the Neo-Pagans. Neo-Pagans because they liked to swim naked by moonlight and professed a great love of nature and friendship. When the correspondence began, Jakes Ravara had been diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. Charles Pryor has compiled their letters and their artwork in a book called Virginia Woolf and the Ravara. He joins us from the BBC studios in Bristol, England. Thank you very much for coming into the studio.
Very glad to.
Now, you begin the book with a fragment from Virginia Woolf's journal that was written in the late winter of 1909, and it appears to be her first meeting with your grandmother. And she said that Gwen Darwin, as she was then, had a charm arising from the sweetness and competency of her character. But she also seemed to feel at that point that Gwen was maybe a little bit sort of second rate.
Oh, I think this is more a reflection on Virginia Woolf than it is on my grandmother, says he defensively. She was a snob, I think. And that shows in all her work, in a way. That's why she called the group that surrounded Rupert Brooke, including my grandmother, the Neo-Pagans, because that was a kind of way of saying you're not Bloomsbury, you're something else.
They were.
Well, they weren't quite so intellectual as the Bloomsbury lot, the Bloomsbury group. And they were much more like hippies, really. They were more into skinny dipping and endless talks about the meaning of life and so on, late into the night.
Right, sex and death and the meaning of life.
The real correspondence didn't start until the Ravaras, my grandparents, moved to Vence in the south of France, just 10 miles north of Nice, because he'd been diagnosed with MS and was getting quite ill, and the doctor said you should go to a better climate. And this extraordinary correspondence sprang up, because in it, Virginia tells more of herself than she tells anyone else, ever. And she is actually more honest. She's less putting on less of a performance. Wonderfully done, beautiful letters.
They also sort of exchange their thoughts on writing.
He writes, there's one wonderful letter where he talks about the differences between painting and writing. Basically, how on earth do you know what you're going to be saying on page 360 when you just start on page one? Whereas with painting, I know, I can see it all. It's all there in front of me on the flat canvas.
I wonder if maybe you could read us a part of that letter.
From Jakes on painting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've got it marked here. It's written September 1924 from Vence. My dear Virginia, one of the things I find most difficult about writing is that it has to be essentially linear. I mean, you can only write or read one thing at a time, and even memory doesn't alter this fact. Now, that's not at all the way my mind works. When you write a word like neo-paganism, for instance, it's as if you threw a pebble into a pond. There are splashes in the outer air in every direction, and under the surface, waves that follow one another into dark and forgotten corners of my past. You are not only a writer, but a printer, and you'll see how difficult it would be to represent this odd phenomenon. One could perhaps, in the middle of a large sheet of paper, write the word neo-paganism, and then radially bits of sentences like this: shame at the absurdities of my youth, apologies if they really annoyed you, but almost impossible to believe that you can have taken them seriously. A desire to defend it, a desire to counterattack, etc., etc. And all this, you see, simultaneously, though even so, it's only what happens on the surface.
A lot of these letters, you know, made me smile. I mean, they're clever and they're funny and they're rather lighthearted.
Yes, I agree. But one hears the pain underneath that humour. I mean, Virginia is, one of the greatest writers of the 20th century. So she's able to do that little dance of the gossip, you know, the wonderful account of the party with 40 men and 3 women.
Your grandmother was a quite accomplished draftswoman, and
yes,
scattered throughout the book are these pencil sketches of Jake's, and then there are his paintings as well. So you can sort of see what everybody was up to in the various periods of time. But there are a lot of pictures of him in bed, in a wheelchair. Yes. Obviously growing more and more sick.
Yes. And it is extraordinary. There's actually two drawings she did of him dead on his deathbed. Apparently, I didn't know that this is an artistic tradition, that it's a way of dealing with the intensity of the grief, is that you actually sit there in front of the body, the corpse, and do a drawing.
There's a letter from Gwen to Virginia Woolf on page 158.
Yes.
And it's just very simple. Jake's died last night, she says. And and then she ends the letter, "It's impossible for me to write decently about all this. I wish you would write to me. I do thank you again, dearest Virginia." And that was the beginning of a correspondence between Virginia Woolf and your grandmother.
That's right, because what we've not said up to date is most of the letters from Jake's were written by Gwen. She acted as his scribe because he was too ill to even hold a pen in the last 2 years. Then when he dies, Virginia writes the most extraordinary letter to Gwen. And then Gwen's reply to that letter is also incredibly eloquent. And, you know, just a few weeks after he died, she's able to say things that... The wonderful bit about getting rid of his boots was the worst thing. Sunday, March the 15th, 1925. "My dearest Virginia, your letter moved me very much. I think you know that I always did love you and trust you. But you know, really, the worst is over now. I think I am going to be happy in a quiet sort of way. The worst was over long ago, I think, or perhaps about 2 years ago was the worst of all. The day I gave all his boots away and knew he would never walk again, ages ago. There ought to have been a hearse and undertakers to take them away, but no one knew, of course. But now, Virginia, I think I am like one of those spiders that eat up their husbands when they have done with them. I've eaten up Jake's, and there he is inside me for as long as I live."
You know, I was just thinking exactly the same thing, that her letters after his death are full of the same kind of cleverness and wit that were in his letters, which theoretically were dictated to her.
Yes, and one wonders how much of her was in those letters from him. Probably more than we know.
I also liked this comment of Virginia Woolf's writing back to Gwen after Jake's death. Where she says, she's basically saying that, "I wish you were nearer so that we could visit and talk." And she mentions in other letters that she has thought of lots of things to say to Jake's, but he's not there. Then she says, "That's the devil of these deaths. They leave life duller, and that's what one resents. Not the horror of the moment, but the flatness afterward."
Yes, and that's how I feel in a way about not ever knowing Jake's, and only knowing my grandmother up to the age of my age of 10. I feel that kind of flatness. I feel I would give anything to go meet them again now. I would get so much more from them, and I hope they'd get something from me. And that's the kind of regret that maybe Virginia Woolf is talking about.
William Pryor's book, The Letters Between His Grandparents and Virginia Woolf, the book is called Virginia Woolf and the Ravara, A Different Sort of Friendship. Mr. Pryor, thank you very much.
Thank you.
To see the paintings and drawings by the Ravara, go to our website, npr.org. This is All Things Considered. From NPR News, I'm Linda Wertheimer.